Blog Talk Radio. Good evening to everybody that's listening to the Wise Women Media, the radio show tonight. My name's Anita Stewart. To find out more information about our show, I just want to let you know about our website, which is at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. You can see a list of our sponsors there. We want to thank Herbie Monsters for giving us this time, this space of time every week for our broadcast. Also, you can get connected in with our social networks. And please don't forget that we are independently funded. We take no corporate contributions. So on the website, you'll find a GoFundMe link. And if you feel so inclined, click the GoFundMe link and give a little bit so, you know, no amount is too small to help us stay on the air every week. And I am totally honored by having two people that knew Michael pretty well, especially Carolyn Baker, PhD, who worked with Michael on his Lifeboat radio show and on the CollapseNet website. That was such a fine offering to building communities all across the country. So, Carolyn, thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you so much. My pleasure to be here.
And also, freelance writer, media veteran, 20 years, and an activist, Sherry Roberts is joining us. And she's been doing, she's been trying to weed through some of the conspiracy theories surrounding Michael's departure and let us know exactly what happened. Since the real story hasn't gotten out, and there's still so much chatter online about what really happened, and Michael really was ready to go, and he let the people that were close to him know that. So, starting one at a time, before we take any calls, I just wanted both of you, starting with Carolyn, tell us how you met Michael Ruppert and a little bit of what we might not know about him. So go ahead, Carolyn, you start first.
Sure. I met Michael in 2000. That is when I first began to wake up to a lot of world events and what was going on. It was shortly after the Bush selection, and I had a lot of doubts. And I began to read his newsletter from the wilderness. I actually went out to Los Angeles over Christmas break in 2000, and I met Michael in person. He had been just the day before he had presented to a class at USC, a political science class on Wall Street's war for drug money. And at that time, he was very much involved with exposing the CIA and drug trafficking. We became fast friends, and a couple years later, I started writing for From the Wilderness. And then in 2006, when Michael went to Venezuela, he asked me to be the managing editor of FTW, and I was. And then when he went into CollapseNet, I came back to write for him. And so that's kind of how I know him, and he's been in touch with me a lot in the last couple of months. He was really in a depressed place.
And do you think that this is a hard question to ask, because when I ask this question, I put myself there and so many other people that I know, including you and Sherry and so many other people that are activists. Do you think he knew too much and it got to be too much of a burden?
I think that's part of it. I think that's a big part of it. I think he got overwhelmed by a lot of things, and you know, he had just made a move from Colorado back to California. It's always stressful when you make a move, even if it's across the street. So I think that that there were a lot of different factors were pressing in on him.
Right. And he also had a new love, so you would have thought that
yeah.
He would have had something, you know, to look forward to. So that part in itself is so bittersweet. Sherry, how did you get in touch with Michael, or how did Michael get in touch with you first?
Well, first let me say hi to Carolyn. This is the first time we've ever, like, spoke verbally.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi. Thank you, Anita, for having us both on.
I certainly appreciate it, and it's the least I can do, you know, to honor Michael Ruppert's memory. So go ahead, you got the floor, and tell us how you first were contacted by Michael.
Well, I had been trying to contact Michael. I was a big reader of From the Wilderness early on. I was one of the original 9/11 truthers. Let me apologize in advance if I sound weird. I'm so tired. I did not sleep last night, and I'm barely hanging on. So if I sound goofy, that's why. I was putting together an event. I'm always putting together events. I'm a 20-year media vet. When I'm thinking about the things that I do with activism and stuff, I'm trying to take my media skills and figure out how to utilize them with other things. And so I'm always doing these things, these events or these projects. And it was, you know, early on, I had been in the truth movement actually since December 2001. I had no interaction whatsoever with Michael. However, in 2005, I was trying to make contact with him. I had a couple different projects going on. He was a big name that I highly admired and hugely respected. I've been reading From the Wilderness. I'd read pretty much anything I could find out there from him in particular. I like him a lot, and what drew me to want to try to do something with him and get him involved with my project was that at the time early on in the 9/11 truth movement, you know, we also had Alex Jones going on. And while as some people say that Michael Ruppert was an alarmist, he was an alarmist in a much different way than Alex Jones was an alarmist. And I actually am thinking about doing a piece in the comparison. Michael Ruppert's kind of gloom and doom, this is coming, this is the end type thing, I got to know him on a different way. That I'm not like really close like Carolyn or Jack or Wes or even his old buddy Doug. I've had anywhere between a minimum of 9 and maybe as high as 15 different interactions with Michael since 2005. Almost all of those were like email type communications, except for 2 were phone calls. And the very first interaction that I had with him was a phone call. It was kind of interesting because, again, I was trying to contact him for a project, trying to contact him through the wilderness, and I found another email. I don't remember now what it was, but I think it was a personal email that I had gotten from, you know, I don't know, like a David Ray Griffin type person. And anyways, he wasn't responding, and I was trying not to hound him, but I was kind of creeping up on the deadline where I had to, like, put something out, and I want to know is his name in or out, you know. I got a phone call randomly, unexpectedly, and I answered my phone, you know, as if it was my kids calling me. And it's, like, very gruff, and, you know, this is Michael Ruppert. And I'm, like, I was stunned, and I was, like, oh, hi, you know. And I'm, like, I had nothing in front of me to look at. I wasn't expecting it. And he's, like really, and if you knew Mike, especially the way I got to know him, if you knew Mike, then he talked like this a lot. He was, like, really gruff. He was either, like, super, he was kind of one way or the other. But most of my interactions with him were gruff, and he actually started yelling at me as soon as I opened my mouth and started telling him what I needed because I said 9/11 truth movement. Now, This was 2005. I didn't know, as an activist at the time, I was working in media and for mainstream media and in Oregon, and I did not know that Michael had, at that point, had a year before, basically, had pretty much pulled out of the 9/11 truth movement. Michael has pulled out of quote-unquote civilization at least 3 times that I know of over this time span. This was one of those, but I didn't know about it. So as soon as I say 9/11 truth movement, he just, like, goes off on this rant, you know, with me on the phone. And so I'm sitting there dead silent while he's like, blah, 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 and I'm, like, thinking, what a jerk, you know, and I'm like, I'm sorry I ever tried to call this guy, you know, and I'm thinking he's yelling at me. And then he abruptly stopped, and like where you wouldn't think he was done, and just like all of a sudden was silent. So I realized I'm still to speak. And my first words out of my mouth was, I'm really sorry, I didn't know, I'm sorry I bothered you. And he was like, oh, no, I'm not yelling at you, I'm not mad at you, I just thought everybody knew this type thing. And I was like, no, I really didn't know, I'm sorry, I should have known, you know. And I felt bad. And so his answer to my question and what I wanted was a no at that time, because he didn't want to be back in the movement, and here, unbeknownst to me, I'm trying to drag him back in. So yeah. That was my very first encounter with Mike. And, you know, when all was said and done, when I walked away, and this is an important thing for me because Mike did something with for me with that one phone call, by the way that he blasted me, the things that he was saying to me, what his problems were with the Truth Movement at the time. He had a lot of stuff going on at that time. I'm not privy to all of it. I believe that also around that time he had recently had a broken engagement. I think there was a couple suicide attempts that I saw documentation of that from his own, you know, his emails and stuff. But the things he was saying are the very things that I went forward in my activist walk with. And Michael had become to me, very unbeknownst to him, kind of my mentor. When I wanted something that I felt that I could really count on and I needed something that was meaty, I went looking through Mike's stuff. If I couldn't find it or I thought I found it and I couldn't understand it or I wanted to make it fit right, I'd get a hold of Mike. And sometimes he'd be real quick to get a hold of me. Sometimes I wouldn't hear from him for like 2-3 months after I contacted him. So it was really kind of a fluid relationship. But he was always, after that first call, he was always very gracious with me, although sometimes gruff. And he never was like, don't bother me type thing. You know, he never, like, gave me hell, you know, for asking him questions or anything. But the first time, he was done at that time. He just, you know, as we've seen him do before, you know, over the years as they progressed.
I wanted to very quickly let people know that we do have callers in the queue, and I want you, the callers there, to know that, you know, if you have questions, I'll be getting to you shortly. But we also have a pretty lengthy question that came to me in an email that I'd like to read first. But I was just going to give you guys a heads up on exactly how I came in contact with Michael. I didn't know anything about him until I was doing a breakneck cross country from south to north drive. I think it was January 1st, 2008, and we were heading up to the Democratic primaries, me and a colleague named Robert Rosowski. And we were both staff for the Kucinich campaign at the time. And because Kucinich was running for president, of course, he was going to be at the primaries. So in this crazy ride from Florida to all the way up to New Hampshire, in the car was Crossing the Rubicon. The book, and I thought, wow, that's kind of a sign, you know, Crossing the Rubicon, that's what drive feels like. And it was, we were going through the worst snowstorms ever. So for this Florida girl, I was having a very difficult time with that. And it was a book that during the drive, when I wasn't behind the wheel, I was picking up that book and just going to any page in it and reading. And it was just one of those books where you could do that. You could pick it up from, you know, page 100 and read 5 pages, and then later on pick it up from the back and read 5 more. And I think through the course of the trip, both going and coming, I read that whole book. And I thought, wow, this is a pretty impressive guy. So, I mean, just his thoughts and everything were right in league with what I was thinking, too. And came back after that those primaries, and really I left the Democratic Party at that point when I saw what they did to Kucinich, and I became a Green and much more radical in my thinking. And Michael Ruppert was also close friends with Cynthia McKinney, whose presidential campaign I worked for following that. And he had her on show, I know, several times. Carolyn, do you remember that?
Yes, he has had her on the show several times. He's interviewed her when he had From the Wilderness. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right.
And
so,
I was able to interview her when I worked for him in 2006.
Yeah, she's a very impressive lady, and worked with her basically because her values reflected my own, and I thought, you know, she's not even getting any media coverage, but I knew she was friends with Michael, and of course at that point in time, it was right around that time, I think, that the CollapseNet formed, the site itself. I'm not sure how soon after 2008. I might be off in my time, but I believe
CollapseNet, it formed around 2010.
Okay, so this would have been 2 years later. And I was still working with Cynthia doing her social network, so the campaign was over, of course. But I remember I signed on to try to form a lifeboat here where I'm living, and definitely started talking to people about, you know, skills and things that we could do together as communities. And another person that was coming out about the same time and talking about the same thing was, surprisingly, was Cindy Sheehan, who was talking about recreating revolutionary communities.
Right.
So it was along the same level. So community became a real buzzword during that time frame.
Right.
So I'm going to go on with this question, which came from Stephanie Sharpless. And she's directing the question to both of you. She says, "Hi, Carolyn and Sherry. On the last Lifeboat Hour, Michael mentioned that he had called Carolyn while he was in Seattle because his mind was waking up ahead of his body in the morning and sitting on the foot of his bed like a vulture. And Carolyn mentioned that he was terrified, which is normal in these times. My question is, what was Michael so terrified of, or did he not know exactly?" And then she says, well, I'll let you answer that, and then I'll go ahead and read the rest. Go ahead.
Well, Michael suffered from a lot of PTSD. He had a pretty rough childhood, and then he was, in LAPD for a number of years. And then just, I think, all of the enormous stress of what he did with From the Wilderness and going to Venezuela and suffering a lot of trauma down there, he tended to be kind of under it, very afraid, and I think that all of that kind of came bubbling up. I don't think it was just about going to Seattle. This has been an ongoing kind of thing. I talked with him probably every other day for the last couple months of his life. And the terror would come and go. So I can't say that it was about any particular thing.
Right.
Go ahead. If it's okay, Anita. Jack Martin, I always want to say Jack Miller because I keep getting him and Wes's last names mixed up. Jack Martin, and for the listening audience, if you're not caught up, Jack Martin is a friend of Michael's, and it was Jack's property and trailer where Michael was staying, and Jack's family also lived on the property. Jack and his wife live in town. Jack and I talked about this a lot because one of the questions I was getting was Mike had made the comment about Seattle kicking his ass, but I think on the show or somewhere else he had also said something about it's like being back in the Matrix. Well, one of the things that Jack shared with me is when Mike was in Seattle, he had gotten a hold of Jack because Mike was getting a little bit overwhelmed. Now, you got to think about the fact that, Mike left California. Jack helped him pack up the house. He goes to Colorado. He's out there about 18 months. And I could talk a little bit on Colorado as we get to that later. When Mike came back from Colorado, which was at the end of February, he hasn't been in California very long. And then, the Seattle trip came up. But he was overwhelmed, according to Jack, because when he, they flew him in all fancy. They picked him up in a Lincoln town car. They're, like, whining and dining him, and it's like this Hollywood kind of glitz and glam, making him the big wig and putting him into everything that he fought against. And his communications with Jack over the time frame, because he'd already moved in over at Jack's property and then went to take this trip, and was that, so when he made that statement about the Matrix, that's what he was talking about. He had gone from basically being completely pulled out of most things for the most part, and, being up in, in Colorado where the closest gas station or store is miles and miles away through the winters and all of that. And he was like, he got like a culture shock, He was like, all of a sudden he was kind of like when he felt I was trying to pull him back into the 9/11 truth movement, it was like, all of a sudden he's like, yes, this is a means of survival financially and all of this, but wow, these are all the things I said I wasn't going to do again, And him and Jack had a lot of conversations about that, and then again after he got back. So one other thing that Mike did when he got back from there that you were talking about, Jesse Ray, one of the things that Mike did when he came back from Seattle is he ran a Craigslist ad, and I have the ad. I don't know if it's still up. It was still up a couple days ago, and I saved the number, and I screenshotted the ad and all that because I'm putting it out in a piece because I have a story about that. But anyways, he in this ad, basically he's looking for a place for him and Jesse and Jesse's son to live. And this is literally after he comes back from Seattle, like less than 2 weeks before his death. And, you know, within it, he says he can pay $1,200 a month. He can come up with all the move-in monies. He needs enough room for him and, you know, Jesse and the boy. I'm not going to say the name because we don't have permission to do that. And then he mentions in there, but he also wants to have room to have a horse once they're financially able. And so, you know, leading up to Mike's death, I have seen some images now of Mike out at the property with Jack and his family and the kids and stuff like that. And you see him smiling and you see him happy, and you take that and you take the Craigslist ad and the fact he was in love and was wanting to bring her here and start a home and life and all of that. And people are like, oh, yeah, then, yeah, or, yeah, he really did this because, you know, everything's showing he's happy, right? But there's some other things that I can speak on when we get to that with regards to the suicidal ideation, the PTSD, and all of that. And it does parlay very much into the behaviors, the images, and everything that we have seen and that we're going to see as I continue to put stuff out.
I'm really glad you're mentioning that. Yeah, I'm really glad you're mentioning that, those other factors, because this was not an incident that happened just because he got overwhelmed about Seattle. He's been talking seriously about suicide for at least 8 years.
Right.
Wow, that's a long time. Now, the other part of Stephanie's questions was a series of questions. And it's on the trip to Seattle. So she says, do you feel that the trip to Seattle, re-entering the Matrix, as Michael put it, was what pushed him over the edge? Just a couple of days before the trip, he was looking for a place for himself, Jesse Ray, I'm not going to say the names.
Yeah.
And at some point, a horse, was glad to be in California, had promising prospects for work, had recently completed the Vice Apocalypse Man series, which he was pleased with. He mentioned on his Facebook page about being picked up in a chauffeured town, maybe she meant town car, from
yeah,
a 20-foot-trailer. She skipped car there. From his 26-foot trailer in a very nice junkyard with a garden. Don't you just love the image? In other words, was the whole scenario of the Seattle scene so foreign to him, more than he could have realized before making the trip, that he became overwhelmed to the point of absolutely needing a speedy way out? And then she says, thanks, looking forward to the show, Stephanie in Cannon City, Colorado.
Can I say something real quick, Carolyn?
Sure,
that part
sure.
is into what I just said. So, Stephanie, the answer to that from my perspective, from the investigation I've done with the evidence that I've looked at, I have probably actually seen a little more actual stuff than Carolyn has, because that's what my portion of what I'm doing now is. Jack specifically is the executor of the latest will that Michael had. Wes was the last attorney of record, and there was another will from years before. They're kind of marrying them together because there's a couple little things that need to be addressed that weren't addressed in the new one. Anyways, as far as that goes to what I was saying about Mike was very overwhelmed with the idea. I think, yes, on one hand, to Stephanie, who asked the question, it was too much for him, but is that what set him over the edge and made him do this? From my perspective, in my investigation and everything that I'm writing, I would say, no, that is not what set him over the edge. There are many, many things, and we can't sit here and try to point at one thing. And the people out there that have seen a video or read a book or maybe a couple videos of Mike's, and they think they know him and want to say, well, he wouldn't do this, or that doesn't sound like him. Like somebody was saying, he'd never say light and love. Really? He wouldn't? He's a very spiritual man. You know, yeah,
yes.
So that's what I was saying. So when we're looking at this, as I've been cautioning my readers, you know, and then, you know, the slew of strangers I don't know that are all over my site right now, thank you very much. But I keep cautioning them because they're, of course, trying to push me to get them everything right now. But the way that everything has happened, Stephanie, I need to do it the way that I'm doing it so that it's digestible, because there is a sequence of events in those final days that parlays to the final moment that is very important in helping you understand it.
Hmm. Interesting. All right, let's go on to the callers because we have four in the queue right now. So I'm going to start with the person who's been on the longest, of course, and this number is 727 area code, so I'm bringing them on the line. Hi, this is Anita, and who is this?
This is June Roldan, Anita. I really didn't have a question. I just wanted to let the host know that I was on the line, that I got in here for the call.
Okay, so you didn't have a specific question. I'm glad you're listening, though.
No, but I know usually my husband used to make call-ins to businesses and stuff like that, and they always gave you a code to give so people would know that you were on the call. And there wasn't anything like that, and I just wanted to let whoever was in charge of this to let them know that I was on the call.
Okay, well, thanks, June. I'm going to go ahead and mute the line so you can keep listening, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
All right, sweetie. Love you.
Love you, too.
Okay, so I'm going to mute her, and then I'm going to go on. I know exactly who this is, and she probably does have a question. This is my friend Beth, who lives in Tampa. Hi, Beth. How are you?
Hi, Anita. First of all, I just wanted to give my condolences. I actually didn't have, a question a really good question formulated in my mind because I'm kind of tired too. But I've been trying to sort of stay away from any of the theories of, online or did he commit suicide and why and all that because I wanted to hear what, the people that knew him really well had to say. So I haven't been reading that much. But I first became familiar with his work when I watched the video about Peak Oil and when he outed the CIA over the whole drug smuggling deal.
Oh, that was amazing.
He confirmed a lot of what I had suspected since the 90s, really. And I'm just sorry to see him go because I don't really feel like his work was done,
And then again, we look at this from the spiritual aspect, and I'm sure Carolyn and Sherry probably agree with me. I know that, they make the saying, it's a cliched saying, when it's your time to go, it's time to go. Sometimes I have to wonder, up there in the universe, the god or the goddess or whatever you want to call it, they know when the job is done, and when it's to go. Don't you think that, Carolyn and Sherry?
I'd like to say something about that. It was stated on your blog, that this was going to be about his legacy, and I really want to talk about that because,
talk about that, definitely.
Yeah, whatever our work is here on this planet, number one, we have no idea how many people we influence, And there may be thousands of people that we don't even know that we touch their lives. And then, we don't have to be here for that influence to continue. So I feel that Mike's influence, dead or alive, is just going to be here for a very long time, exponentially in the lives of people he's touched.
Well, that's very true. Yeah, I agree with that. I think he helped to wake a lot of people up. That's for sure.
The word that he wrote, books, will live on forever. I mean, the movie Collapse, an amazing accomplishment. I know that I read the book. Actually, the book Collapse was the first book I read on Kindle. And I remember that specifically because I was trying to get used to my Kindle. And I thought, wow, what an amazing piece of work that he put together there that involved so much research. And and I think probably a lot of those things depressed him too because he did know so much about the oil industry and big oil. And then again about the police the influence, how can I say, not the industrial complex, but the law enforcement complex, which really
well, yeah, I would,
I don't know what else to call it, because they're making, you know, everybody's on the take, and they're on the take for sure. So,
right.
So yeah, the legacy lives on in what he wrote and what he, how he appeared in that movie. And the movie was just amazing. I loved Collapse. I could not stop watching it. And I thought, and people call him a conspiracy theorist. I mean, there's nothing that he's saying that can't be debunked. I mean, that can be debunked. Everything is truth.
Right. You know, and I want to go back to Crossing the Rubicon for a second, because that's a 600-page book with over 1,000 footnotes, and it's in the Harvard Business School Library.
Right.
And it's really a tome, you know, and if you really want to, it is the best thing, I believe, on 9/11. If you really want to get into the research, I highly recommend reading it.
It's a really,
and he really was the first one to
author
a book like that about 9/11
yes,
on that topic.
He
was. Really was
yeah.
the first one that, I mean,
yeah.
the report, face it, the 9/11 report was just a bunch of garbage as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
The 9/11
and that book,
report, yeah.
Yeah, that book that he wrote, Crossing the Rubicon, yeah, was, I mean, like I said, it was just fact after fact after fact. It didn't matter if you opened the book in the middle or towards the end or in the beginning, wherever you were picking it up. It was like picking up a history book, you know.
Right.
Yeah,
it's going to be
exactly.
meaty stuff, whatever page you happen to be reading on. So, so I thought, wow, that. But of course, that book introduced me to him. Of course, you know.
Right.
So
you know, Anita, what you're saying about how all the citations on that, or I'm sorry, Carolyn, I think you said it, over 1,000, you know, citations and the sources and all that. People don't realize how important that is anymore, because we're used to seeing links online and stuff, and
right.
we don't have those footnotes and endnotes like we grew up having to create, you know. And
yeah,
when
right.
you know, at least when you have that in a book, or the people that are still doing it in their longer essays and whatnot online and still having those endnotes, I still appreciate those, because when you have links in there, depending on the fonts and the color schemes on people's websites, some, like on my website, sometimes it's hard to tell if something's a link or not. And so, you know, with those, because I'm, you know, it's just like Wiki has it. Wiki's still that way. You know, Wiki's got all the annotations on the bottom. So, you know, you're used to looking, okay, look, because I want to go back to this, but I want to quickly see what this is. You don't want to open another window and do all that. Before Beth goes away, I'd like to say something to Beth about what she said when she first came on. Beth, at some point during this show, we're going to address a little bit mental health and stuff like that. But you said something that I'm getting, you know, every few minutes, and that is basically what I heard you say, was that you felt, that's really pivotal, you felt his work wasn't done here. And I was talking to a close friend of mine the other day who is very upset about this, and the same kind of verbiage coming at me. And the reality is when we have a hero, regardless of for what reason they're our hero, we have them up on this pedestal, and what we know of them is what we see of them, what they've chosen
right.
to show us. In Mike's case, he showed us videos of varying different demeanors over the years and even over the minutes. He's shown us his writing. Again, very different things over the years and over the minutes, depending on where he was. But what a lot of people that are his fans and followers that didn't know him even as little bit as I did, you know, again, you got this hero. So when things like this happen or you know, somebody breaks a law or does things like that, we're just like in disbelief, pure disbelief. Well, they would never do it. Their time's not over, da-da-da, or they still need to be here. Their work's not done, like Beth just said. But I think that every individual person has a certain capacity. When your tank is full, your tank is full. And
right.
when we lift up these heroes like that, we forget that they are, in Mike's case, Mike was a man. He wasn't just this hero, you know. Mike was a man, not a whistleblower, not an ex-cop, not a this. And it boils
right.
down even to a more common denominator than that, and that is Michael Rupert was a human being, and he had faults, and he had problems, and he sat on the toilet and stank up the bathroom, and he, you know, did wonderful things with Jesse, and he did all the same things that every other human being does. And he felt those things, and he lived his life, and he has things that we don't know about, I don't know about, Carolyn don't know about, you know, the closest people to him probably don't know about. Mike was the type of person that I've garnered, and I've had nothing but reinforcement from the people I'm dealing with, which is Carolyn, and the attorneys and the executors of the will and the people that Mike was literally with. So when people are doubting the stuff I'm putting out there, Carolyn can attest, everything I'm putting out there is being handed to me by the very people Mike was with, the people that loved him
exactly.
most, that were taking care
yes.
of him. I am 100% legit what I'm putting out there. I have seen everything. And so,
right.
Beth, we need to take a step back, whether it's with Michael or anybody else, just like John Judge, who I also knew, and I literally just wrote a small little story about Mike, and then through Jack and Wes ended up doing this much grander thing because nobody is doing what I'm doing. And so I just want you to realize that everybody's human being, Beth, and there are people in your life that have expectations of you, and when you let them down, you don't want them to feel how you're feeling now as if, you know, you've let them down. And Mike didn't let us down. Mike did everything that Mike set out to do. Our feelings about the end result of Mike, those are our feelings. They're very individual, even though some of ours are together. I'm not a psychologist, but I do have certain kinds of credentials that I can speak on this. So I just simply want you to know that, you know, when we're feeling this grief and this loss and, like, oh, what now? Who's going to fill those shoes? Nobody can ever fill those shoes or whatever. Those shoes were a man's shoes, okay? And we need to treat this at this point, not just Michael Rupert. His legacy is, and we'll get to this part at the end and stuff, but really is we're human beings, and we got to do something here.
Yeah, we've got another caller. This one's from area code 918, so I'm going to queue him up here. Hello, this
okay.
is the 918 area code.
Yes,
what's your
I'm
name?
In Oklahoma. And my name is Amy.
Good.
Hey, Amy.
Did you have a question for either of our guests?
I have a few questions. I'll start with his writings. I know he mentioned he was working on a book. I would like to know if any of that will be possibly published anytime posthumously. Any of his writings?
He only completed one chapter, and I believe that document was left by his body, and it's just very incomplete. He talked to me about a month ago regarding starting a book, and I totally encouraged him to do it, but he only got through one chapter.
Okay. And what about the film or the media event, what he was doing in Seattle, is that going to be seeing the light of day even after his death?
I have no idea.
I might be able to find
okay.
that out. Amy, I might be able to find that out and have an answer that I'll put up in a piece on SherrySpeak.com sometime by next week, early next week,
okay.
Because that's not quite as rushed of in my line of things that I need to get out, but
yeah.
that is a good question, and lots of people are going to want to know that, and I can find that out for you. I'm in contact.
And second of all, I'm dealing with a wall of anger today. Okay. I am a veteran with PTSD, and I'm on disability for it. I've went through years of depression. I am not in that place. I am very sad, upset, and grieving, but I'm not depressed. But, my God, yeah, I have a no life. I spend all my time on the Internet. I can handle people that want to trash talk him that didn't know him. I'm having a problem with some of his so-called friends.
Right.
Trash-talking him, saying, oh, in a tribute I'm reading about how he couch-surfed. My God, the man wanted to change the way we look about money and walked it, and people are still lording it over him that they had more than him?
Right.
Oh, my, I'm furious. And then someone saying, well, you can't use the word depression. And someone saying, well, your grief is narcissistic. No, there is no narcissism in
that.
Grief.
I saw that.
Yeah,
saw
I'm not
page.
Sure what forum that was in.
On his page.
I can assure
his,
you if
page.
they're talking like that, they
and,
were.
And what gets me more upset than anything else is people that say, well, he should have done this. He should have gone to, you know what? I think more of his so-called friends should have told him they loved him. Not you. Not you, Carolyn, and not it, Jesse, and not the people closest to him, but the people that knew him. and then have the gall to say, oh, well, I let him shack up with me, or I let him sleep on my couch, or I let, yeah, my God, that's, not, you know, that's not, and that's on a tribute page. You know what I'm saying? I can handle,
yeah.
I can handle the conspiracy shit. I can't handle his friends that still want to backstab him after his death.
Right.
Yeah, that's sad. That's really sad. And unfortunately, you know, this is why Sherry is doing her pieces, because Sherry wants the truth to get out.
I'm very grateful for those, too.
Thank you.
Yeah,
right.
Wants to get the truth out and you know, quell these crazy rumors and conspiracy theories surrounding his death. And that's another reason why we're doing this show. But definitely we want to get to the legacy portion of this, too.
Yes.
Because
and where
Michael
and,
Rupert...
And,
so much.
And I don't think he did anything that needs forgiven for. And the only thing I want to say at that is, honestly, at some point, if I had friends like that around me, I wouldn't be here today. I will say that.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know how some of those people. We don't really know how close they were to him physically and around him in that way.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
We know they were posting on his Facebook, and if he was married,
or not just
Facebook
on, I mean,
anything,
doing their own little tributes and stuff. You know, like
right.
Like Ross Corey did, and then said that he's a conspiracy theorist who killed himself, and then put away.
No. I mean, just like someone saying, "Oh well, he had, you know." In other words, the guy should have just gone to a meeting, laid off the bottle. He shouldn't have drank a beer, and oh, he slept on someone's couch, and oh well, you know, really.
Yeah.
Because
I want to thank you for your input, Amy.
The truth. Always, and what really got to him was Fukushima and the BP oil spill and the fact that we are at near-term extinction, not just the stuff during 9/11, not just Iran-Contra, but what we are facing today.
Right.
Correct. That's true.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And
I
was one of the first
that
actually started talking about the Gulf oil spill on CollapseNet. I was talking about it before anybody else was. And I remember a few people didn't want me to write any articles about it. There were a few people behind the scenes, and I submitted some things. I'm not sure if they were ever published or not, but I was very concerned when it happened. And being that I'm an activist here in the Gulf region and have been ever since, April 20th of 2010. I've never stopped doing that.
Yeah.
And now they're fracking Florida, so.
Oh, they're
right.
Fracking
they're
Oklahoma.
Fracking
I feel earthquakes every single day.
Yeah, and they're
right.
They're putting through a natural gas pipeline as well. They're just going to destroy Florida as well, just like they're doing in so many other locations throughout the United States. But I want to thank you for your input, Amy. And
all right, I'm sorry if I really went off, but it's like I've had this inside me. I've been crying ever since I found out. I got my copy of Collapse in the mail the day I got the news, and I was planning on coming out in 2 weeks to see if I could get it personally autographed. And I'm leaving Oklahoma to find a sustainable community of like-minded people.
Well, good for you. And
it was
good for you.
There's probably somebody close to you if you look.
No,
you know.
I do not want to be in Oklahoma anymore. It's too right-wing gods and guns.
Yeah, right. Well, Amy, thank you for calling in, and you have a great evening and good luck to you.
Thanks,
and
Amy.
You know, we just remember that karma is a bitch. But when people put out that bad and negative energy, they're going to get it back. So, you know, the only thing we can do is stay pure.
Yeah,
for sure. And Amy, you know, everything that you're talking about right there, we're gonna go into that throughout this show. So stay listening.
Okay.
Thank you, Amy.
I'd also like to, if I might, Anita, I just wanted to announce that I will be hosting a tribute show to Mike on Sunday night for the Lifeboat Hour on Progressive Radio Network, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. We may have a call-in from Cynthia McKinney. I don't know. I've spoken to her, and she may be calling in. And Mike left specific directions for me to take over the Lifeboat Hour, so the show will go on. And
Carolyn,
I feel
I'm so glad.
I feel very, very honored. Yeah, thank you. I feel very honored to be able to take over that show. His shoes are way too big for me to try to fill, and nobody can fill anybody's shoes anyway because we're all unique. But I'm going to do my best to carry the torch.
Well, he was Michael and you're Carolyn. So it's like
that's
two
right.
different, you know, don't even bother trying to fill his shoes.
Yeah.
You have done some amazing work just on your own, so
right.
you know, we're all looking
exactly.
forward to seeing the morphing of that show to
Thank
be
you.
Your show, and that was wonderfully generous of him to give that to you.
He trained me for it for a couple of years,
so
I feel pretty prepared.
Right.
Yeah,
we've got
another
caller on the line. This is from 646 area code. So I'll click them in. 646.
Oh, I forgot we had a chat room. If you're listening, there's a live chat room going on.
Yep.
Well, good evening,
and there's
ladies.
A chat room, and you can also call in at 213-816-0357. So 646 area code, your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Hans, and I'm calling from New York.
Hey, how
are
you,
Hans? I'm good, thank you. And I wanted to say good evening to all three of you, and it's been a pleasure listening to the three of you, and I'll see what I can add to this conversation, as it were.
Okay.
Very like Sherry, I think, who made the presentation in terms of the where we started finding Mike, and where I found Mike was really through the 9/11 movement, because we were very connected to what had taken place. Did not mm-hmm. believe the conspiracy theory, which is the official story. And I really used the term conspiracy theory right back at the CIA, since it was they that promulgated and made that term theirs. And then people have accepted it, even people that are really fighting against it use the term. So I really never used that term except to put it where it really belongs, with those that conspire constantly.
Right.
But just to continue, Mike helped tremendously in putting exactly what Sherry said, putting clarity and putting, I think, a lot more facts where most people were still, you know, grasping at straws to really understand what had really taken place. I think even the military background that he had was able to put in place how you cannot attack a country within a few weeks unless you have preparation that takes months. And that was an important facet in understanding some of the things that really took place. In other words, you have to have preparation in place. But I would have to say that after all that, follow them through CollapseNet and everything, I did stop listening to Mike. If Carolyn wasn't there on the show, I think he deviated to, you know, his personal grief, and it became continuous. And I could see that was a very tough situation. And for me, you know, we're searching information, and at times, you know, listen, I've done shows where I've cried, and I've done shows, but I can't keep bringing my problems or my state of mind when you're trying to sort of mobilize people, galvanize population, galvanize people to think. So I think, to me, that was one of the things that I sort of stepped back. And even through the conversations on Facebook, I also stepped back. I had Mike as a friend and so on and so forth. So I think that was important in where his road, his trip was going, his travel plan. And there are certain times that you have to get off, you know, that travel plan. And for me, that was important for me to get back. I think Caroline tried very hard. Caroline Baker tried very hard in every conversation that I was able to listen to on Gary Noel Radio, which is PRN, I think, off the top of my head. And so she brought in a calm to the show that was very much needed. And I think Mike wrote on that considerably. But,
oh, yeah,
you know,
Carolyn comes across as the anchor of Mike on the show,
exactly,
and she brought the balance into it. Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly the word. It's the anchor. But I think for us here, and for some of the people that are doing stuff on Facebook, we each have our own commitment to our reality and to a greater reality, which is whether it's from community to region to country to the world. And Mike has helped us tremendously.
Yeah. Yeah,
yes,
he did.
I'm sorry, I'm tweeting.
I'm tweeting and in the chat room while we're talking to keep everybody going. Sorry.
So,
I am listening.
So, no, that's okay. So in our mission, I think we have to continue to push the flame forward. We have to continue to do the work that he's done and more, because that's how you honor people. You don't honor people. And I think grieving, as Amy just said, I've had conversation with Amy today for the first time. I had written something for Mike in which she clicked likes, and so we became a little bit of a little group of 20 people, and we will be doing a conference on Monday night, but we will all be listening to Carolyn Baker tomorrow night, making sure that, you know, we're on, you know, to listen to what she's going to say. And if the line gets open, I know Gary's going to be doing something. He's taking a full week to do something, but that's fine. But as I was saying, the flame must continue to burn forward. We must continue to search not only our deeper selves, but also to continue to search so that we get more information and be prepared to take life as it comes. Even if it were to end tomorrow, we ought to give our best shot every second, every minute, every hour, every day.
Right.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you, Hans. That was a great call.
That gave us a little bit of perspective. So, we have some other comments in the chat room. There actually was Miss Montoya, who is a 27-plus year forensic expert, and she's made some comments that she's very sad about what happened, but she could see some in the films, YouTube of Michael. She could see some of his behaviors that were consistent.
Yeah, there's one in particular most people don't know about that he did right before he went to Colorado. It's called Crumbs. Michael called it Crumbs. And it is quite disturbing. And you can see very clearly Michael's state of mind. 2 years ago, it was like May of 2012. And 2 years ago, Michael's state of mind was beyond anything that we have seen as far as... Now, Carolyn, of course, has heard much more because that, you know, he leaned on her so much, especially towards the end. But what he was projecting out there with Jack and the kids, because the kids were around and stuff, was happy-go-lucky, you know, with the kids. So we're seeing images that are not, you know, going in line with what we know. And so those videos you're talking about, I'm pretty sure at least one of them, you're talking about Crumbs. I believe it's May 2012. I don't have it in front of me right now. I've got a million windows open. But I was going to, it's on my list to bring up. So if you go onto YouTube, anybody who's interested in seeing this, you go to YouTube, and if you Google Mike's name and with Crumbs, C-R-U-M-B-S, like breadcrumbs, but just Crumbs, you should be able to find it. And, again, you know, the disturbing aspects of Apocalypse Sam that you find in there, because there are some portions in there where it's painful to watch. And especially for me, which we'll get into later, or hopefully actually soon, because I think it's going to clear up a lot of things for the rest of the conversation to go forward. But so look up Crumbs on YouTube, and you will get a taste, even though that's been 2 years ago, you will get a taste where people say, oh, Michael would never do that. Michael never acted like that. Michael never said this. Michael, you know, yes, he did. Yes, he did. And there's plenty and plenty and plenty of documentation.
Well,
he stated very publicly that the reason he was going to move to Colorado was to commit suicide.
Right. Wow. I'm glad you said that, Carolyn, because I had that piece of information too, but I hadn't put that out there yet. So.
Right.
Now I wanted to talk about the legacy. I mean, Hans was so wonderful in how he brought that up.
Yes.
And what we all need to be doing. I know that we're all on a different path heading for the same place from what I can see, just the three of us here. But Carolyn, how is Michael Rupert's legacy and the fact that he gave that show to you, how is that going to help you continue, and what other projects will you be starting with being inspired by him?
Well, you know, for all of his quote-unquote issues, you know, Michael really had a deep longing in his heart for a spiritual path, And he really had a deep longing in his heart to be conscious of his emotions and to help people prepare emotionally and spiritually for whatever is in front of us. And so that's a lot of what my show will be about. I'm certainly going to continue talking somewhat about current events. I publish a 7-day-a-week daily news digest on a subscription basis. People can find out about that at my website, carolynbaker.net. And I publish this news every single day. It's similar to the digest that is put out by CollapseNet. That covers economics, environment, civil liberties, geopolitical issues, culture, and then I have something that's really kind of unique at the bottom of the digest every day is options and how people are confronting these things, dealing with these things around the world. So I will continue to talk about current events and connect the dots, you know, similar to how he did at the beginning of each show, much less about me and my issues and what I need, and I have a really good lineup in mind of guests. I'm thinking that in a couple of weeks I'm not going to have a guest, but rather probably just have a little fireside chat about who I am and what my intentions are and what I want for the show.
That'd be awesome.
Oh, that sounds great.
Carolyn, that would be awesome. And for everybody listening here, because we all know how this is going to play out, as soon as you do something that strays from the norm on the show, oh, it's not Mike's show, it's not what he wanted. You know what? This is
your show now.
Mike legally, for anyone out there, I know this, I've seen it for a fact, Mike legally gave her the show. Okay, he planned for this before his death. It's legit. Anything that Carolyn wants to do with that show is up to Carolyn to do with that show.
Now,
he did ask
Sherry,
me to
what
keep the name
will you
life,
be doing next?
He did
will
ask
you be
me to
continuing
keep the name
on?
Hour.
And how
wait,
will Michael
Anita?
Rupert? Yep.
I'm sorry. Carolyn was still talking. I wanted to hear what she was saying at the end there.
I didn't hear her. Go ahead, Carolyn.
No, that's okay. Yeah, he did ask me to keep the name Lifeboat Hour, and so that's what I'm going to do. But he said, do anything else with it you want.
Right.
That's amazing.
And, yeah, so if people are expecting Carolyn to go and continue Mike's show and do it Mike's way and stuff, Carolyn is not Mike. And so these are all the little things that I'm doing with the writings that I'm doing. We have to expect these things to come to play and fruition, and we shouldn't abandon the shows that we watched and stuff like that. We need to give them a chance and, you know, and don't automatically think the bad.
Right. So
Anita.
Sherry, you're on the hot seat now.
I am literally. My laptop is burning my leg right now. The legacy that Mike has left for me, or that I am going to take from Mike and take on and go on forward with, it's a little twofold. I've already told you that, unbeknownst to him, he was a mentor to me, and I am the activist I am today because of Mike. I'm also, in part, the writer that I am today. Because of Mike, the copious amounts of research, those endnotes, footnotes, you will find in my writing. I don't use the endnotes and footnotes on my blog on sherryspeak.com just because people aren't accustomed to that on the blogs. But I research everything. You got links for anything you want there. And most often, one of the ways I found in my writing to fight against, you know, corporate America and to reach outside of the choir so I'm not just yapping my lips at the choir all the time is, If I can find almost anything I want in mainstream media, you just got to look for it. And on government websites and EDU sites and stuff like that. So I've discovered that I found a lot more power, and this is directly because of Mike, a lot more power in my writing because I very rarely use alternative media links because I don't want to talk to people that read alternative media. I want to talk to people that I want to start, you know, listening and reading and watching alternative media. So I want to get to those people, and those people, they want Fox News. Those people want CNN. Those people want, you know, whitehouse.gov. So, but the bigger legacy that I didn't know until this happened with Mike, I shared with Anita last night, and I'm going to try to be real succinct, but this is very important to the story and why I'm doing what I'm doing, and you'll understand a lot more. I have bipolar 1, and I've had bipolar 1 for a long time. As an activist, I'm always up against pharma. It's one of the big things I'm a vocal proponent of. And my mom died 3 years ago, and leading up to my mom's death, the more stress, the more stuff that was going on, I was her caregiver. I was having serious issues with bipolar, and they kept adding medications to her. I couldn't do anything. I mean, I couldn't be creative or nothing. Well, after the day my mom died and stuff, I started weaning myself off the medications. I've been off of all bipolar and any pharmaceutical. I don't take Tylenol even very often. I've been up for 3 years now. And the difference for me with the mental health issue of it and where this is going to parlay in here is that I learned for myself how to self-manage without the medications, without putting the poison into my body, because in my belief, in part, it's the poisons around us that have caused a lot of the problems that we all have. Now, one of the problems that Mike has that's so heavily documented that we talked about was the suicidal ideation. And this is super important for everyone listening to understand. When somebody has suicidal ideation, they're not down and depressed. It's not like they say, oh, I wish I could die today. It's not like that. It's not like anything you have ever experienced in your life unless you actually have it legitimately. Suicidal ideation is one of those things that is a daily part of your life. So for me, and I know, I think one of my kids is listening, they know all this about me. So, Nicole, if you're listening, you might want to turn off for a minute if it's going to upset you. For me, one of the things that I found is that I focus on specific things for whatever reason, not because I thought it would be better or whatever, but every time I see those specific things, no matter if I'm happy, my kids are around, life's going on, and everything's going great, if I see a knife, if I see a bottle of Advil PM or something like that, I automatically recognize it over anything else in that room. I'm like, okay, that's over there. It's your constant planning. Suicidal ideation doesn't just come out of nowhere, out of your butt, and it doesn't just go away. And so when we're trying to tell you that Mike took his life and that there's all this evidence and that there's all these things that he did, I can speak from personal experience that happens to me every day of my life. And thousands of you know me. And not that I'm anybody important, but I've been around a long time. I've been in the Truth Movement since 2001. And, you know, maybe some of you have seen me when I've been, like, maybe really manic, or maybe you've seen me when I've been really down. But few of you have ever seen me when I'm dealing with the really hard push of that demon that's there constantly, but it rears its ugly head. And when you start looking after the show and you're looking at the crumbs video I told you about and you're start re-looking at some of the stuff you've already looked at, and you look at it from this perspective, it's going to make more sense to you. So the pieces that I'm writing and I'm putting out, as I told you, I'm getting this information from all the legitimate people. Everything's vetted. I'm vetting everything. I'm you know, it's all legit, okay? You're getting the real stuff. I'm not going to hold anything back from you. I am going to share with you very minute details that I don't really want to share. But because Mike was, and I'm going to use the word conspiracy theorist, I'm going to tell you why it's important for me and for media, okay, because there, and for anybody that's writing, because that term is not going to go away. But, you know, all these things that Mike did, like I said, is that we just have to realize that we can't think of it as just depression. Suicidal ideology is so much more. It is a way of life. It is a part of your daily constant life. Now, with Mike, when I tell you, I'm going to tell you some details, and I say that I got to use the word conspiracy theorist. This goes back to what I said to Beth about looking at our heroes as a hero versus a man, a woman, or a human being. Well, when we have our own little knowledge and skill sets, and so we're like, oh, well, I hate that term conspiracy theorist. Well, guess what? I hate it too. I also hate the term truther. However, if I'm going to write something and it's going to be digital in any way, a blog, a news story, a website, I need to use terms that people are searching if I want my search engine optimization to be there. So everybody that don't like the term conspiracy theorist, let me tell you, I hate it, but I'm going to keep using it because that's how I'm getting people to read these things that we want them to read. That's how I'm getting people, my clients, that's how I'm getting them to go to their website, because I need to use the terms that people use. So, again, we got to be really careful when we're judging all these little things and stuff like that, because we're judging them from our own personal perspectives and opinions, and we're not judging them from a reality base of the situation and where it's coming from and where it originated. and in this case with Mike and the suicidal ideation, we can't just assume that we know what that means if we don't. I do. I do know what it means. And every story that I put out there, I'm putting it out there from that perspective of Mike. I can see these things, not that I can see through Mike's eyes, not that I am Mike, not that we're exactly the same, but suicidal ideation is, it's very cookie cutter in the sense of it is this. This is what it is and this is what it does. And what you do with it is different. And so I am able to look at this stuff and all the research that I've done and basically the crime scene stuff and all of that. And what you have here is you have a very, very clear picture of a sick man. And I don't mean that, I don't mean like sick and he's crazy and a lunatic or anything like that. He wasn't well, and he wasn't well for a long time. And I don't know if it was Amy or the first caller had, or maybe it was Anita, I'm sorry, Anita said, does he know too much? All these things parlay into it, but everybody's looking for a single thing, and it's not that. This boils down to the problems that Mike had in his entire life, how his childhood growing up, the PTSD, his time as a cop, all these things, all these stories he's done, all these research. It's an accumulation, you know, when a snowball goes downhill, right, it gets bigger and bigger and faster and faster. And when you have suicidal ideation, Jack had said to me, you know, like with Mike, all of a sudden, I got to move. I got to be out in 3 days or 10 days. Everything was drama. It was always quick. And now, and this, that's very much part of PTSD, bipolar, different mental illnesses, and suicidal ideology. These actions are not bizarre in the sense like they never happen. These happen with Mike all the time. Isn't that right, Carolyn?
That's right.
So this is why... I'm sorry, I'm almost done, Anita. This is why for people who are I have a lot of people saying, well, I don't know why this particular blogger is getting the notes and getting this and getting that. Well, this particular blogger can actually speak on this issue because I knew Mike. I'm familiar with, you know, his work. I'm a fellow activist that has a body of my own work. I don't have a PhD behind my name, but I'm an intelligent woman who's done a lot of stuff, and I'm known out there for my work that I've done. But the real common denominator here is with Wes and with Jack is that I do know things. And also I'm a great writer, don't you think? No. But, I do know things, and I know how to bring this to you so that you can know what I know. I know much more than I ever wanted to know about this. And I'm trying to give it to you how you can digest it and get it. And so as we continue to talk about these legacies of that Mike has given us and that we need to do something with, I really believe that I was put in this position to do this because of the fact that I have very, very similar illness as Mike and can relate in a way that you most of you can't. So my legacy is to make sure that without romantic, I'm going to read you a very quick paragraph. I wrote this. I think it was something I wrote to Jack that he shared with, like, our inner core that we're working together right now with Carolyn and Wes and a couple others. And Wes shared it to me, and I thought I was in trouble. I'm like, oh, you said I can share everything I had, you know. And I'm trying to open it up for whatever reason. It's not wanting to open for me. Here we go. So with the when we're looking at these things, I want to read this one paragraph because I just think it's just very poignant to what the point I'm trying to get across. And in moving forward and in how we're dealing with this and what we're doing with this, we can't lose sight of that. That is the most pivotal aspect of the end result of Mike. And that is something that ruled his life, coming from somebody who it rules my life. It's no joke, you guys. So I wrote this to, like I said, I think I wrote it to Jack. And this is going to give you a little bit of idea of kind of the mindset. When you decide that you're going to die, all right, when you have suicidal ideation, you're constantly planning and updating your plan. And it's just like a crime scene. It's means, motive, and opportunity, all right? Mike has had means and motive for years and years and years. The one thing that Mike didn't have a lot of was opportunity because most of the time he was with somebody. He was staying with Doug or he was with Jesse Ray or he was with Jack and Jack's family lived on the property and stuff like that. What I can share with you that I haven't shared yet is that, I think I just shared it this morning, but I'll go into it a little further. Mike, the day that Mike took his life, was the first time since Mike had been back from California that he was alone on that property. Jack had been there earlier in the day. I'm going to give you a complete timeline on my blog here and within the next few days with all these finite details for you. But Jack, they had interacted and been there earlier that day. Jack had a very interesting scene with Mike and Rags. And I got news on Rags that's coming out tomorrow for you. Good stuff. And so when Jack left and everything, Mike was there by himself and he did the show. What I can tell you, without any doubt, from my investigation, those notes that I've been putting out there the last couple of days that you've been reading, Mike had to have written the bulk of the notes and what's in those notes before he did that last show with Carolyn. There's not enough time. And another weird parallel with all of this, I was telling Carolyn, this was really strange, that Mike died on my dad's birthday. And the timeline of where I've pinpointed his death without the autopsy report at that point was pretty much exactly when we were singing happy birthday to my dad, which was kind of funny. And the only reason I know the time of that is because my dad was mad because we were running late because he had a date. And the other weird thing about it is, you know, Wes keeps sending me these emails that say MCR, and I've been looking at them for days, and it kept bothering me, and I kept thinking he's writing something wrong. My initials are CMR. And so I kept wanting to change it, and I found I was writing my initials instead of Mike's. But so the legacy that we're moving forward for me, you guys, is we're gonna learn more about mental health, and we're going to start treating people better, because a lot of you, unless you are my daily or weekly reader, because I talk about this all the time, you probably didn't know this about me. And you're probably sitting there going, wow, you know, or whatever. And I'm a very normal person. I'm a highly productive person. I do really great stuff. But I have problems, and Mike had problems, and it doesn't make us bad people. So the thing I wanted to read real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
The thing I wanted to read real quick, and I'm going to end my little thing with this, is the way everything panned out, and like I said, I'm going to give you the timeline and the details, but everybody's asking me, and you want to rush to the punchline, so I'm going to give you this little paragraph here. This is what I said to Jack. You know, people keep telling me they're sorry for my loss. This is our loss. I said, I am sorry for our loss. And I would never romanticize suicide nor encourage it or endorse it. But between us, in Mike's case, I do totally get it. I mean, I understand. I understand how this came to be. I understand how Mike's general suicidal ideation was only positively reinforced by his experiences with the Native Americans and their spirituality, especially with the Lakotas. And I'm not saying anything bad with that. But Mike already had a problem, and he happened to get into another thing that just kind of reinforced where his mind was already in a bad way. So it wasn't a good marriage in a sense for that. However, I say, so whether I, you, or anyone else thinks what Mike did was right or wrong, I am convinced 100% that Mike was convinced that what he did was right. It wasn't an act of cowardice. But it was an act of courage in Mike's mind. I'm not saying that what he did was courageous. In Mike's mind, what he did was courageous, and it was a part of his faith. And it, just like Jesus dying on the cross was my example. And because I say that, because you all keep coming at me with, what is he saying for the children, for the children, for the children, in his notes. We are the children. This is like Mother Earth, Earth's children. We're not talking about little kids running around the property, even though Jack had grandkids there. That's not the children we're talking about. We're talking about us. And in Mike's notes, as you see, his flesh for the children. He's doing it for the children. The Lakota, and I'm hoping Charlton calls in, because Charlton can talk about the Lakota ceremonies and stuff much better than I. However, you can look these things up, and you'll get a much better idea of how things were going down and how this all relates with Mike and what the children mean, because I really need you guys to stop thinking that that is some weird cuckoo thing that went off on him, and he's like, what little kids he's doing all this for? How do you raise kids if you're dead and stuff? Because that's the stuff I'm getting all over that phrasing. So that's what that's all about, you guys. And like I said, you're going to get all those finite details. This conspiracy, I'm a conspiracy theorist, but the conspiracy cuckoos, the conspiracy pornographers out there, as my friend Scott Ford calls them, you know, I'm going to give you those details that you so desperately want, but then I want you to leave me alone, because Mike killed himself. We can't bring him back. He's gone. And we're going to make this, we're not going to romanticize it, but we're going to take all the good out of this. We're going to find this legacy that we know is there, and we're going to do what Mike wanted to do. This was Mike's final warning. When you have a dying child and you're going to do anything you can possibly do for that child. You're going to try every alternative medicine, every cuckoo doctor on the corner. You're going to do anything that you can to save it. And that's what Mike did because he thought he was saving us.
Carolyn, do you have anything to say to that?
There's one thing I would like to add, and I really agree with Sherry, and I thank you for all of that.
Thank you.
Mike had an addiction to alcohol for a number of years, and that addiction was addressed for a while when he was in a 12-step program. He left that 12-step program in 2006, and from my perspective, I think that really added to the toxicity that was going on for him. And, you know, we all have our perceptions about smoking. You know, from my perspective, it's really toxic for the body. And you add to that the alcohol, and you add to that the PTSD and the suicidal ideation, and you've got a really volatile situation.
We do. Yes. And just to tag that real quick, and I need to address what she said about the alcohol and my kids, if they're listening, you know, and my friends. I've had issues over the years, not where I'm like a, you know, stone-cold alcoholic, but it's part of self-medicating. And what happens
yes.
when you have these
yes.
problems, you're trying to feel better because you're either too up, too down, too this, too that. You're not acting right. You're not feeling right. So I'm going to have a drink, or I'm going to have a smoke, or I'm going to do this. We're trying to find the things to make us feel normal. Which is
right.
one of the great things, and I hope Anita don't get mad, and Carolyn don't get mad. That's one of the great things about cannabis getting rolling out and legalizing out everywhere, because it's going to be a big help for so many things.
Yeah,
oh, not have all that toxicity.
I'm definitely pro that. I mean, as a licensed medical worker here in Florida, you know,
right.
the most natural medicine is stuff that comes from the earth. So, you know,
right.
we had an
right.
attorney down here. I've got to give a shout out to him, attorney John Morgan, whose father apparently needed it at his end of life. And this attorney put on his own dime $3 million, which is how much you have to pay to get something on the ballot here in Florida. But he got it on the ballot, so we'll be voting for it in the next election cycle. And I think they did a poll, and something like 69% of Floridians wanted it. So,
right.
Big
yeah.
shout out to, you know, the attorney, the Morgan & Morgan attorney law firm, because he's the one that
awesome.
Put in his money to do this. And you mentioned I'm definitely for it, definitely. I would much rather give a patient, you know, something that's natural than give them pharmaceuticals, which just screws them up. It screws up their whole system. We have two callers on the line. Are you guys ready for two more questions?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay,
how long is your show, Anita?
It can go for as long as we want it. Once we go over an hour, we are scheduled for 2 hours if you want to stay on that long.
Okay, sure.
Okay, here goes. This is 213 area code. 213 area
okay.
code, can you give us your name and where you're calling from?
Hello?
Hello? 213?
Hello, yes.
Yes, did
yes,
you
hello.
Your
Am
name
I
and where you're calling from?
This is Kendock. I know this voice. This is Kendock, the mighty Kendock.
My name is Paul. I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Oh, it's Paul Tisopoulos. I knew that voice. Hi, Paul.
Okay. Hi. So I've been looking at this since I heard about what's been going on here. Ms. Baker, I have a couple questions for you. I'm looking at your
sure.
site on your About page. It says that you were a professor of history and a PhD, but it omits what schools they were. And also I noticed that Rupert omitted that information on the show when he introduced you. What's that all about?
Oh, I don't know. On my Facebook page, it indicates that my PhD was from Columbia Pacific University. My master's in history was from University of Colorado.
Oh, it says on your I'm looking at carolynbaker.net about page.
I know, and it doesn't
okay.
have the actual institutions that I attended on my about page, but it does
mm-hmm.
on my Facebook page.
Oh, I see.
And there's okay, no so- conspiracy or dark motive there. It just doesn't have it. And if people ask me, I tell them.
Okay, so where were you the where were you a adjunct professor?
I was an adjunct professor at New Mexico State University, El Paso Community College, Vermont Technical College.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, and my other question is this. At the end of the show, when Rupert was signing off, he said twice that he was going to be back next week and he'd see everyone next week. I mean, that's declaring that he's not committing suicide in a few hours, but I don't hear that information coming from Sherry or you or anybody. Why is that?
Are you talking to me or Carol?
I don't know.
It's my question for the situation. I mean, he clearly stated at the end of the show twice that he was coming back next week.
So I know. Carolyn was there. Carolyn was doing the show. She heard him. I've listened to it over and over and over. But is that all you listened to in the show? Did you listen and read every lyric of that song? Did you listen to his tribute? Are you just picking out the things that look like smoking guns? Are you going with everything with a finite comb in its entirety to see what Mike was doing? Mike did a very, very clear tribute, not just to the activists that he's named by name, but he named all of us. He said it was for all of us. And when you listen to that song, and I just listened to it, go and read those lyrics. Mike was saying goodbye, but he's not going to sit there and say, hey, I'm going to go off myself soon as I get out of here, dude. See you later. You know?
Well, yes,
and
sir, it doesn't address my point, though. It doesn't address my point.
I am addressing your point. You want us to say something that we're not going to say because you're wrong. He did say that. I'm not saying that you're wrong that he said that, but you're
well,
running under the assumption
that
because
should,
he said that.
It's important.
You're
that
not looking at everything else, Paul. Paul,
yes,
you're not looking at everything else. No, you're not, because you're zeroing in on one thing without taking it. You're taking it not in the context of everything else of that show.
Well,
Paul, what is your
the information
what
on
is
your
point?
Site.
Paul,
my point is
what
that,
is your point?
My point is that that information should be presented with all the rest in all of your presentations, and it's not being. There's something wrong with that.
Can I say something here, Paul? You're Sherry said, you're taking one little part of the show. We can't repeat everything that was said on that show, or replay the show. Anybody that wants to hear
can go
back and listen to the last broadcast that Michael Rupert did. But
what Paul's saying, Anita, is valid. What Paul's question is valid, and what I meant by taking one little part without all of it, obviously, Paul reads my blog, okay? I've known Paul for a long time. But as Paul's reading my blog and reading the stories I'm putting out there, he's also seeing me tell people, there's more coming. I'm doing this in a sequence. You guys don't have all the information yet, okay? I keep telling you, you don't. But I need to give it to you in such a way because there was a pattern to how he laid this out. And you won't understand the end result, which is really, on one hand, as horrific as it is that he killed himself, and I'm not romanticizing this, but there is a beauty in the end result of this that I want to share with you, Paul, but I need to get through point A to point Z to do it. And you need to allow me to do that and not harp on one little thing, because I haven't gotten there yet. I didn't step into these shoes and say I was going to go do this job. I wrote a little thing that was my own little goodbye thing to Mike, and then next thing I know, I'm writing a bunch of this stuff, and I've got all this stuff in my lap. I haven't slept in almost 48 hours right now, because I'm trying to get all this out to you as quickly as I can. I'm one person. I got 10 fingers and one keyboard, okay? And I got to do it right. I'm going to honor this man the right way. I will address that. That is part of what I'm doing. But you got to be patient. You can't just zero in on one thing.
Look, when someone is shot, you can't declare it a suicide without a police report or without an autopsy. I mean, it may look like a suicide.
Autopsy.
There may be evidence.
There's been an autopsy. There's a police report, an autopsy. That's all been done, Paul. It's all been done. I'm saying you don't know this yet. You don't know yet. I keep telling you
secret?
That on my blog.
It's secret? Well, let's see it. Why isn't it public information?
I'm sure if you contacted the county, it'd be public information.
When will I be able to see the autopsy and the police report?
Call the county and go get it yourself. You want to see it right now?
You're saying that – are you saying that for some reason you're withholding it, like it's secret or something? I don't have it
in my hands. The attorneys have it. They got to do some redactions on
it. So you haven't seen
things.
It. You're taking their word for it. It's ridiculous.
No,
I have seen it.
I've seen it, Paul. I don't have the actual paper in my hands. I've seen this. They scanned it in. I've seen these things. I was on the phone with Jack when the coroner called. I was on the phone with Jack when he was on the way to the mortuary this morning, okay, to do the cremation thing. All right, trust me. I know what's going on. These are the real people. You don't need to be a conspiracy theorist on Anita's show, because what you're doing is you're doing conspiracy pornography, Paul, because you're only looking
at
one thing.
When are they cremating
the body? You're not looking
at
everything.
When are they cremating the body?
When I get done with the show, it's pretty late for Jack by the time I'm done with this show, okay? I haven't been able to talk to Jack since he got back from Napa, because he had to go to Napa to go and do all this. I will know by tomorrow when that date's going to be. Now, it depends on the mortuary, what their schedule is, and if they're going to do any kind of bumping because of somebody else dies or whatever, okay? I will have an answer to that. You are not going to bully me or badger me or Carolyn or Anita or anybody else in our little group of those people that are dealing with the Mike thing to make us give you what you want. Because you know what? Mike wouldn't do that. We're doing this Mike's way, Paul, because you know what? This is his life and his death, not yours. Stop being selfish like I was telling other people.
I just want to say that if an autopsy's done and a death certificate has been filled out, those are matters of public record. When you contact the proper offices, you can get a copy of those. But that has nothing to do with us. That's something any normal citizen can do when they contact the county. So nothing's being withheld on this show or that we're not doing that. And that was not our intention. We are giving the information that we have at this time. And Cherie has some other items that she's going to be writing into a piece that you can read tomorrow. But if you want to contact the county, you can do that, and I'm sure they'd be able to provide you with a death certificate and an autopsy report.
As a media person that you are, technically, you know, you can call the sheriff's department. That's what I'm saying. You're acting like we're withholding stuff from you that's readily available to you. Well, the only thing that I haven't put out there yet is some very finite details of, like, how he held the gun, Paul, how he was laying, Paul. Okay? I'm going to tell you the whole story, Paul. All right? But this man mattered to me.
All right.
And I want to do good by it.
Does that answer your question, Paul?
Yes, it sounds like you've made a sincere effort to answer my question. I appreciate it. I thank you.
Okay, well, I thank you for calling. Did you have anything else for Carolyn or Cherie?
No, I think we're good. Thank you all for your efforts. Gratitude to you.
Thank you, Paul. Okay.
Okay.
We'll go on to the next caller. We've got a bunch of callers here. So we will try to finish up. Let me go ahead and bring that person
on. I'm sorry.
On.
I didn't mean to cry. I have a long-time experience with Paul. I don't have any animosity towards him, but I knew exactly what he was doing because we've had these arguments over different situations before. And him, as well as other people, they get on this one little thing, and they don't care about the process. They just want their answer. They're being selfish. People say that what Mike did was selfish. What about the selfishness that we're seeing with these people that supposedly respected this man? Let us do this right to show our respect.
Now, we have a caller on the line. I understand, Cherie. I really do. I understand. So we want to do this right. We want to make it right. This is supposed to be about Mike's life and legacy.
That's right.
It's 970 area code. Can you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
This is Charlton calling from Colorado. Can you hear me?
Hi, Charles.
Hi, Charles.
Have a question for our guest?
It's Charlton. It's Charlton, and Charlton is the one that's going to address the stuff with the Lakotas.
Okay.
Cherie, thank you for correcting Carolyn. First, Anita, Carolyn, and Cherie, thank you. And this is,
thank you.
First of all, this is difficult for me. while the time that that I got to have with Mike was short, he and I really were brothers on the spiritual path. And to be frank, his body of work, a lot of it is unknown to me. And has been very distressing to me to give time to, while I also know that I must give time to it because of how imminent things are, what he has been addressing. Mike is gone. I recognize that. And when I first found out on Monday night, I was shocked and I was angry. And like nearly everyone else, I immediately went to the place of the conspiracy theory. Somebody killed him. He was taken out. And in paying attention and listening and talking to many folks who are close to him, it's clear to me the statement that he made in his death. I am not Native. I have been following Lakota ways for well over 20 years, and I have been, I'm going to use the word accepted, into Lakota circles deeply. And this is where I re-met Michael last summer at the Sundance. I'm going to say this, and I do it very, very tentatively, because my instruction in the Native ways is to not draw attention to myself. And that is why I did not want to call, and I do not like being on these types of shows. So I'm really, really sticking my neck out in saying these things. But it is out of love for this man who's brothered me. I am a sun dancer.
Right.
And that is where I met Michael, or re-met Michael, last summer. And we had a very limited amount of time to talk. Part of it was during the Sundance ceremony, which is very rare and really not done. But it happened that Michael was in the back of the inner sanctum of things, and he and I had the opportunity in the midst of a very, very sacred ceremony, which is a life and death ceremony for me and the people. Let me back up for a moment. The Sundance ceremony is in Lakota, Wiwang Wachipi, which means the staring at the sun dance. And the prayer of this dance is Oyate Yani Piktacha, which means so that the people may live. I'm going to say that again. So that the people may live. And this is the definition of Michael, so that the people may live. And a great
right.
prayer of the Native people that I know is for the children. One of the most sacred things to say is for the children. So that when he said these words over and over in private emails just before taking his own life, and in these suicide notes that we've seen publicly, where he says, quote, for the children, unquote, this is the message. It is no small thing. It is, yes, for us, but also for the little ones and for the seven generations to come. And
right.
so most of us from the Western, quote-unquote, civilization, don't know these things. They're unknown to us, okay? most of us come from a Judeo-Christian background of dominant society where we don't understand and we don't know these things. The way that I have come to understand Michael's passing is that he has given his life away so that
we may live.
Both that we may live and that we get our butts in gear to carry on his body of work. Okay?
Right.
And we're going to do that in all sorts of different ways. The way Carolyn's going to change the show into it's going to become Carolyn's show. It's not going to be Mike's show anymore. Okay?
Right. And we have to accept that.
Okay? Right. And I'm concurring with that. You know, all of these small things. There are other people like Carolyn, like you, Anita, like Sherry, who have been working very, very hard already. And there's a lot of people, I'm considering myself one of them to an extent, who have been sitting back and letting Michael and you all do this work for however long and haven't been empowered. And part of Mike's giveaway is to empower us to do the work that he has been doing for 40 years. And for Carolyn, I don't know how long you've been doing this work, and Sherry, how long you've been doing it, and Anita. Okay, I'm a psychotherapist here in Colorado. Okay, I give free therapy to veterans. I work with veterans. I give free therapy to them. Okay, I work with people in my community and meet them where they can financially, if that's free or incredibly low cost. I'm not a wealthy guy. In fact,
I wish I would have known you when I was there.
Well, by the standards of the government, I'm in abject poverty and financially. Okay. But I'm an educated guy, and it's my duty as a human being to help my community, whether that's immediate and local or internationally. So I'm clouding the water a little bit, but the point of me calling is to say that while I don't condone suicide, and I don't necessarily agree with how Michael went about doing this, and I'm not going to address his state of mind and how it's been. My relationship with him was, I just spoke to him a few weeks ago on the phone we had a very lengthy conversation, and he said, I said directly to him, how are you taking care of yourself? Are you taking care of yourself? And he said, yes, I am taking care of myself. And he told me what he was doing to take care of himself. I trusted and believed that he was doing okay. I knew that all of this stuff that he's addressing has to have an intensely difficult, dark burden on him. So I wanted to make sure that both he knew that I loved him and supported him, and I wanted to make sure that he knew that I was looking out for his back, that he was taking care of himself. So
that's awesome.
I hope I clarified some of that. I'm going to shut up now.
Well, Charleston, I'm sorry, Anita. I just want to tell you how Charleston came to be. Charleston actually had approached me, what was it, like 3 days ago, Charleston?
Approximately.
Yeah, approximately 3 days ago, and I was, like, super, super, super busy at the moment, and I couldn't really give him time to talk with him. And but then it was ironic because he was saying something to me because I was addressing this question I keep getting over about for the children on my site. And I had made my response, and he's like, yeah, that's, you know, because all you listeners right now, and what I'm going to, you know, when I'm telling you that I have more to tell you of the story, I'm trying to do this as gently and kind as possible. And the reason that I was encouraging Charleston to call in is because he could speak on this a little bit better than I do and say those words that I can't say. So I'm like, when you see the way this ended and the end of the story, as I'm, you know, I'm writing this as fast as I can, you guys. You know, it's a lot of words. And there is a beauty in this, and again, not to romanticize this or whatever, but it's, you'll understand the story, and it parlays very much into what Charleston just said, and I can prove this. And I, for every conspiracy theorist out there like me that had questions and was somewhat skeptical or speculative or whatever, I was too initially, but I have seen all this stuff, and I believe that I do not have this in my possession. I do know where it is and who has it, and I'm not going to tell you that till the very last thing in my story, because it's something that you wouldn't think would be something that I could prove undeniably that Mike did this himself, but I can, and I'm going to, and that's how I'm going to end my story when I'm able to get all the rest of this out to you. And so keep remember what Charlton just said. Remember what I was saying and what I said in my blog post today about, and what I said in the paragraph I read earlier. He really, because he had the problems with the mental health, the suicidal ideation, the PTSD, when he started getting involved in all this beautiful stuff with Charlton and other Native American and indigenous people and stuff like that, and doing these things and becoming even more and more spiritual, those beliefs, religions, whatever you want to call them, those creeds, you know, everything's different. It just so happened that the one that he embraced so much and was finding so much joy in was the very one that reinforced all this suicidal ideation that he's had all this time, because this was a sacrifice. Mike sacrificed himself for us, and you guys will see that in the end with everything that we're doing. And
we have
two more callers
real quick, and we're going down to the last 15 minutes of the show. Carolyn, you still with me?
Still with you.
Okay, sorry, Carolyn. We've got Carolyn and Sherry to answer. You guys ready to answer two more questions?
Yep.
Okay, here goes. This person is from Maryland. So the Maryland caller, can you tell us what town you're in and your first name?
Yes, hello. I'm from Montgomery Village in Maryland. My name is Dawn.
Hi.
Hello. Hello.
Hi.
What's your question for our guest?
Well, I wanted to first thank them very much, and especially the young lady who spoke about her bipolar problem, and she's very brave to do so. It's been that whole thing was the first thing I thought of when I had been listening to Mike for about the last, I'd say, 6 months. I've been listening to the Gary Null show for 12 years and have been very active in the Maryland area in his alternative medicine treatments, and I'm a big supporter of him and an advocate as well and an activist in the area. And I just wanted to reinforce what you said about the suicidal ideation, because it's a terrible thing. I have a family member that I literally had to participate in saving her life about a year ago, and it was because the medications made her even worse. And luckily, through Gary Nell's protocol with person who he works with, a holistic nurse, at least we had her surviving on things that helped to detox her. And when she got off of the medicine, within 24 hours, she didn't want to kill herself anymore. And they balanced her thyroid, but they did put her on lithium. I know that. I understand that. And maybe you don't want to do that. But the point is that...
Go ahead. I can't take it, but
a lot of people can't take it, and I certainly understand that. And there's, you know, natural GABA and blah blah. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that it was making me ill to listen to Michael, and I loved him so much because of all the work he had done in the research. Because I'm a research nut myself, and so is Gary, obviously. But it hurt me so much that Gary wasn't able to help him in any way, or that he didn't reach out to Gary or whatever, number one, seeing as how Gary is the reason he's on PRN.FM, and number two, it broke my heart that he had said he had laid down his weapons, because in the same way he said, I'll see you guys next week, he had said 4 weeks before that he had completely laid down his weapons and he was embracing the feminine aspect of life. So I think he thought he was. He was a very ill person, and he needed a thorough deep, and he needed somebody there all the time to nurture and care for him on a regular basis. was totally, totally overwhelmed, and I couldn't, and you know, I know as a reasonably stable and mature senior that I get overwhelmed with regular life. So anyway, I just find his part of his legacy to be that people understand that this is a lot of your mind is in your gut, and until you clean out your gut and get rid of all of those toxic addictions that Carolyn was speaking about, you will never be healthy, and you will always be have that on your neck, wanting to kill yourself on a daily basis one way or another. And that's all I wanted to share with you and to beg you to approach Gary, and I think Luann Pinesi is a nurse that can help people on protocols like this and save people no matter what their spiritual path can be, because they will use that as any excuse, you know, and
right.
I don't mean that in a pejorative
yeah.
way, but that will
right.
that will hook them
right.
that will hook them onto finding a
right.
reason. And the thing
right.
is about Carolyn and other people like Gary, he honors life, he adores life. He will, in the face of a near-term extinction, he will bust his behind to do whatever he can do to survive and to save the children with knowledge and health and well-being. And that's what we all have to
yeah.
grab on and move
yes.
forward.
Yes.
We cannot live in the darkness.
I agree.
That's beautiful. That was beautifully said. And I think another message that we can take here as well is just hold our loved ones closed, you know, just the touch factor, just touching the hand, giving a hug,
yeah.
giving encouragement, giving a kiss.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
you have to hug for 30 seconds or it won't take. So you got to give a big, long hug. Hopefully my kids are coming up tomorrow to celebrate my birthday, and trust me, it's going to be a big, long hug.
Are you a Taurus?
I'm sorry?
Are you a Taurus? Are you a Taurus?
No, I'm Aries.
Aries, yeah, my birthday's next week. Not this Sunday, but next Sunday.
Yeah, no, mine
yeah,
was last
she's on
month,
the cusp.
Yes,
I think
it's
it goes
way too
into...
cold. Mine was last month. It was way too cold. I'm from the Caribbean originally, and I couldn't face freezing cold, so it's a picnic tomorrow.
Ah, there you go.
You're
well,
right.
We have
so
one more caller, but I want to thank you, Don, for calling in, and that was beautifully heartfelt. It was just really what we needed to hear. And thank you
oh, yeah.
so much.
And Gary's giving a worldwide. He just wrote me a little note. He put a like and he wrote a note on my when I shared his worldwide spirituality talk tomorrow from 3 to 5. He's going to be giving it. So go to his PRN website and you're sure to find it. The whole world's going to be listening. 150 people are going to be listening to him as to how to follow your authentic spirituality. So go at it.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
You have a lovely accent. You said something beautiful in such a beautiful little voice.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I was born in British Guiana, British parents, but I lived in 10 countries. I represented America in 5 in the diplomatic service here.
Thank you for service.
Thank you so much. It's my honor and my pleasure. And Carolyn, thank you for making me your friend.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you, Don.
And please... listen to the show again, and hopefully we'll have both these ladies back on for another show.
Yes.
Who knows?
Oh, they're wonderful. I'm going to sign up as soon as I figure out how to sign up onto this blog talk, whatever.
All right, thank you. You
okay,
have a great evening.
Thank you.
Thank
bye
you.
Bye.
It's been an honor. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
We have another caller.
We'll go on to the next caller. This is not... got an area code. This is Constantine for Abilene. This has come up that way.
I'm calling with Skype.
You're calling through Skype? Okay. And what's your name and where are you at geographically?
Constantine. I'm in Texas at the moment.
Okay. And did you have a question for our guest? We're going down into 6 minutes, so I'm so sorry we couldn't get to you quicker.
Oh, that's all right. The only question I had is I'm a spoken word poet. Actually, I was nominated for Poet of the Year this year at National Poetry Awards. I knew the gentleman by reputation, and as Native American myself, I was born on a reservation. I just wanted to read a short poem I had in dedication because I really find all these questions really in poor taste. But just like say something in tribute, if I may, instead of give a bunch of
something uplifting,
because I'm much better at this, certainly.
Okay.
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Fade in. The drum beats as our heart does, a heart that beats of the land, of the sound of the spirits whispering of our pride, our family's clan. There are some teepees falling into dust, an endangered species. We are losing way too much, and we of that world forgotten, pushed aside and left alone. But comes a time when we shall rise again. O great one, hear our prayers and our song. For there's a memory. It's that eagle that holds high as it soars where we are free. And in the wind and the sky, there's a feeling inside that stirs this madness to have the chosen life that be. And then the fields of sadness comfort us, for we all move westward into that setting sun, and our pleas and our protests to this day, they need not be burden us anymore. And I can still hear the crying of the drums, of the men and the women that have gone that trail of life. And if you listen with your heart, though, and not just with your ears, you shall hear. You shall hear the drum beating as our heart, that heart that beats of the land, that sound the whispering and the frying and the time of our family's clan. And I think it's what I's done, and now we have all begun to travel to the ancestors in a far better place than this. Nuaki Oyeskonda. Aki Gaskoli Ka in the way Kaskaika Niska Atoliska Darye Aikida Tareka Yuagans Akadishki Navi Teda Pupuvene Anavi Amakwini. Rest well, my friend. Fade out.
Thank you, I believe you. I'm touched by that.
That was a great ending for the show.
Thank
very
you.
Very beautiful, and it's greatly appreciated. And I just don't know what to say after that. We're going down into three minutes. And Carolyn, did you have any closing comments? We're going to have to be as brief as we can.
I would just like people to tune in on Sunday night and listen to the Lifeboat Hour at 9 p.m. Eastern on PRN-FM. And we will give a tribute to Mike, and we will probably be announcing another opportunity for people to gather online, a sort of virtual memorial wall happening in May. And I'll have more details about that on Sunday night.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for being on the show. And
you're welcome.
I can hardly
my
wait
pleasure.
To, what morphs out of this in regards to the show, the radio show that you're going to be doing. And Cherie, have you got any closing comments? We're down to 2 minutes and 33 seconds.
Yeah, just everybody's listening, that you want to keep following the story and you want to get the whole story and get to the end of the story and everything, like I said, just keep going to CheriSpeak.com, C-H-E-R-I, speak, like speak word, .com, and almost daily, sometimes more than one daily, you know, I'm almost daily, I'm putting something new on there. And, you know, I got stuff coming up about rags, like I said, I have a timeline coming up, so you definitely want to keep watching.
Okay, I did want to let people know that there was some interference when Constantine was reading his poem, so I do have a way to get to it, and I will attach that link underneath the blog post on wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com so you can listen to it in its entirety where you're not going to have the interference. And I just want to remind people that we're going down to 1 minute now. You can find us online at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter at Wise Women Media. And we have two Facebook pages. One is a regular page, Wise Women Media. Another one is Wise Women Media, the radio show, and that is a Facebook group. So we urge people to connect to us. We are part of a bigger network that's called the Common Project Network. And Here Be Monsters is the one that gives us our space every week. Don't forget to hit us up at the GoFundMe link. We take corporate contributions, and we depend on people like you, listeners, and activists to help us stay on the air every week. I want to thank my guests and everyone who called in. This was a great tribute to Michael Rupert, and he will be sorely missed. And what a wonderful 2 hours this has been. And have a great evening, and we'll see you next week. Happy Easter. Thank you, everybody.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Good night.